A majority of Hoosiers approve of Eric Holcomb. An even bigger majority want marijuana legalized in some form. That plus Dennis Cruz no longer chairs Senate Education and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending November 16th, 2018.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, a majority of Hoosiers say they approve of Governor Eric Holcomb's job performance in Ball State's annual Hoosier Survey. 52% of Hoosiers say Governor Holcomb is doing a good job, compared to just 13% who disapprove. But about a third say they don't know him or don't have an opinion about him. Ball State's Charles Taylor says that number makes sense, given Holcomb's low-key approach. Taylor also says Holcomb could help himself by taking more of a lead on some policy issues. Otherwise, he risks playing into the hands of a future political opponent who could help craft a less positive public image. Holcomb is eligible for re-election in 2020. Does Eric Holcomb need more people to make up their minds about him? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, Mary Beth Schneider, editor at thestatehousefile.com, and Nikki Kelly, statehouse reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, 52% of Hoosiers say Eric Holcomb's doing a good job. Is that hard to argue with?
I'd like to ask them the follow-up question. Name one thing he's done in the 2 years he's been there. He's not done anything. On the other hand, he hasn't offended people in the way Mike Pence has. So that's a good approval rating, but, you know, Indiana's in danger of changing its slogan. Instead of being the crossroads of America, we're going to be the state of incrementalism. We're not doing anything to address the fundamental problems in any meaningful way. I mean, the idea that we have 15 counties with marginal preschool access, and we have all those other counties that don't have it. He talks about getting internet to the rural areas, but it's talk, just like the DCS reform is talk.
We talked about that a month ago. It takes a minute to expand broadband to rural areas.
I understand that, but it also takes steps, and it also takes money, and it also takes something besides. Well, we've always had, or at least under the Republicans.
Oh, we're spending the surplus again. We're back.
We're back when in good times you're supposed to invest in things like infrastructure and like the education for your people. For example, when Amazon comes calling, we have enough educated people to fill those positions. I mean, that's what you do when you're in a good financial position. And what they do is a little Band-Aid on the opioid crisis, a little talk about getting internet access to the rural areas, and really not much in terms of what we really need.
32% say they don't know Eric Holcomb or they don't have an opinion about Eric Holcomb. That leaves a lot of room for him to be defined, whether by himself or someone else. How does he start to do that as he looks forward a couple years into the future?
I think it's a great starting point kind of coming into the cycle. We're only a week into, obviously, the 2020 cycle. We have a municipal race, obviously, to hold between here and there. I think he's done some good things. He does have a lower key.
What has he done that's good?
So we have a fully funded road plan, 20-year road plan. We talk about jobs. We've had hundreds of thousands of Hoosiers engaged in the Next Level Jobs program. Mm-hmm. We're going to have a lot of good, like, personal stories to tell in 2020. Either people coming off drugs, getting jobs in the government, helping facilitate all that. Now, those are low-key things. These are not high-profile, like, massive projects, but like rural broadband. We now have $1 billion coming off the toll road in this new deal that Eric Holcomb brokered to invest in rural broadband to finish I-69 2 years ahead of schedule. So there's a lot of... It's $1 billion for multiple things, right, that we're going to invest in multiple things, which are all good. From just a political kind of the math standpoint, typically your second-year governor is at least 4 years into having been running for office or serving in office, and probably have spent years prior to that either serving in Congress or serving the legislature in higher profile political roles.
He's
very experienced, just not in elected office, right? Uh-huh. In a way
Although
that people normally
running,
consider
he
it.
He was running for office for a while, yeah, just not lost. The office he ended
right.
up.
Yeah. And then, of course, we had this kind of like this moving of the chairs in 2016 where he became governor and ran in 100 days, and that was not a long time. He got swept in this kind of Republican wave.
So he's got a lot of upside.
I remember Joe Donnelly had like a 40% approval rating and a 30% real. reelect, when we were talking about him 18 months ago.
Yeah, the reelect number will be more important.
And the 13%, I mean, the 13% disapprove, if you're anybody with a title in front of your name in a public poll right now and you're in 13% say they disapprove of you, that is really low.
Yeah, is that maybe the most positive number for Eric Holcomb in this survey?
Yeah, I think so. But also, it's compared to what? There is no Democrat out there at all that is in a position right now to beat him, who's even visibly running against him. And that's in his favor. I think Ann's right. He does need to be more bold. I think in some ways, Eric Holcomb hits the sweet spot of Indiana, which may be incremental. But I do think to be a successful governor, it does help to get out there and be more bold and have your name and your face identified with positive change in the state. Now, you know, some of the things that he's most known for right now are things that maybe Republicans might not entirely be happy with, calling for the Attorney General to step down. And he's also come out, I think, fairly forcefully for hate crimes, and there will be some, on especially the evangelical right, who may have to be persuaded that that's the right step to do. I think this session will help define him a lot.
The reality, though, in Indiana right now, at least as we've seen electoral results the last few cycles, is if you're a Republican, certainly at the statewide level, that might be all you need. So at that point, he's a Republican with fairly decent approval numbers. Is that really all Eric Holcomb needs?
Oh, I think he'll have to have more under his belt by then. But, you know, he hasn't done anything that was like a splash of awesomeness, but he also has made really not any missteps. I mean, very minor. And I do think the hate crimes issue is going to be a really important thing to watch in the session, because it's one thing to put out a statement that says, I support this. But what we need to see is if he's willing to put his political capital behind it.
Yeah. Or behind dealing with Curtis Hill. He's just called for the resignation. Let's see what he does with that.
Yeah.
Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we post an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, do you approve of Governor Eric Holcomb's job performance? A, yes, B, no, or C, don't know, or no opinion. Last week's question, will Congress move to protect the Mueller investigation after Jeff Sessions' resignation? 61% of you say yes, they will. 39% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, also in those Hoosier survey results released this week, only 16% of Hoosiers say marijuana should remain illegal here. Those in this year's Hoosier survey say marijuana poses less of a problem in their communities than other drugs and even alcohol. And 81% of respondents say marijuana should be legal in some form. 42% who want medical marijuana and 39% who say recreational marijuana should be given the okay. Those most supportive of some kind of legalization, young people aged 18 to 34. And those 55 and older were most opposed. Michael Bryan, I don't think many people would disagree that there is a culture shift going on around marijuana all over the country. But when do we see these sorts of numbers that we saw in this survey make a difference at the State House?
Now, I mean, that's the point. I mean, you can say, yeah, I support it and hang the phone up, but that doesn't mean you're, like, motivated to action and do the kind of organizational things that are required to go get something, get that kind of lift out of the State House.
Though there is more of that than we've ever
seen.
There is.
There's no doubt about that, just to the point where it's culturally, you know, moving that direction. I think one thing that's been interesting, and you've spent a lot of time at the State House like I do, the diversity of industries that are now interested in this. Are we going that direction? How does it affect my industry? And this is everybody. It's healthcare, banking, logistics. I mean, ag, obviously.
Ag, yeah.
Everybody is looking at this to see how either their current industry is disrupted by it or how they can get in on it. And so I think that will be part of the thing that moves us to the next step. Indiana, I think on this issue, we're almost going to become that kind of that state in the Midwest that's got, you know, we're the only ones not doing anything on it. We don't particularly dislike as Hoosiers being in that position, but certainly the polling and the public support helps. Ultimately, I think it's going to be generational. You've got veterans behind it. It's just how active are these people going to be in moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, these numbers are really strong for some sort of legalization, but is it going to require the phone calls, the emails to lawmakers
to
really
probably, because they are a very conservative bunch. But the question is, what does that mean? Are we going to decriminalize it? I mean, effectively, the use of marijuana has almost been de facto decriminalized. Are we going to legalize it? Are we going to tax it? And where the proceeds go? And does the federal government still take the position they can't go into any federally insured bank? I mean, there are lots of questions that are out there that would need to be resolved. Now, maybe with Sessions gone, the hard line they've taken on that issue may fade, and some of those problems would go by the wayside. It would make sense if you're going to legalize it, decriminalize it, legalize it, and tax it. Makes perfect sense. But you've got a lot of unresolved questions. I mean, you can't easily test for being intoxicated, for example, when driving, as you can with a breathalyzer and alcohol. So do we go back to the old, can you walk a straight line, can you touch your nose, those kinds of things? I don't know, but there are a lot of questions associated with this. I think the decriminalization is a minimum that people totally support. And then the question is what the federal government does for how far we go on that.
Obviously, the General Assembly took a fairly significant step for it in just that resolution in the House last year, in the last session. I've started to do that now as we get closer to 2019. But realistically, do you see much progress in the 2019 session?
No. I mean, we had a pretty significant hearing on it with lots of testimony. They couldn't even agree on a pretty mediocre statement of we should look into further, you know, looking into this.
Incrementalism. I mean,
we could not even agree on that.
It doesn't fit on the side of the building. It's worked right now. We can't fit incrementalism.
You know what? They need to take a fact-finding trip to Colorado.
Jim Lucas, who's happy to talk about that.
I do think, though, I mean, we are seeing younger lawmakers. Yeah. You know, we've got a new crop of them coming in. So I do think in probably in the next 5 years, I would say it happens.
It's so funny, though. I mean, I'm not considered younger anymore. When I was in college, the predominant smell in the dorm was pot.
Where did
and
you go,
so, then? University of Illinois.
Oh,
you know,
man.
My sister's
that
college
explains
2 years earlier,
good,
it was
there are
popcorn.
Good things about Illinois.
But, you know, you would think that they would at least be open to medical marijuana, that you're talking about people who this is going to ease nausea, it's going to ease pain. You know, you should at least look at that. Recreational, I understand, and I share some of the concerns about that. You know, do we really need more munchies, you know, in Indiana?
But how do you, if you legalize medical marijuana, how do you prescribe it? How do you obtain it? I mean, there are lots of questions in that also have to be dealt with. I mean, is it interstate trafficking in it? I think that's still against the law. Do we grow it here? If we grow it here, you know, on and on.
There's a lot of states that have figured that out, though. You know, it's not like we're the first.
Yeah, we will not be the first to do anything on this. Yeah,
well, we usually are somewhere between the 29th and the 50th on any innovation.
And we're close to 29th.
We're close to 29th, so we could get there in a year or two.
All right. Well, Republican Senator Dennis Cruz will no longer leave the Senate Education Committee after a decade at its helm. Incoming Senate Republican leader Rod Bray announced that Republican Senator Jeff Rotz will take over the chairmanship of the Senate Education Committee next session. Cruz led that committee for 10 years. In a statement, he said the position is rewarding, but it has also been demanding for him and his family. During his decade in committee leadership, Cruz oversaw huge changes in the state's education policy, including the teacher evaluation system and private school vouchers. Rotz was elected to the Senate in 2014 and has held the number 2 post on the committee. Nikki Kelly, will this change have a noticeable impact next session?
I'm not sure about the impact on the policy. I will say process-wise, everyone in the State House had a little cheer because God loves Senator Dennis Cruz, but his committees were just grueling. Yeah. He heard far too many bills, and in the end, things got cobbled together and missed. And so I do think it will be nice to have some fresh perspective in there and to, you know, maybe hear some different bills than just from the same people that we usually hear
from.
You
pointed out, too, that he, in his statement, he said he stepped down as opposed to just being replaced. I'll ask you this. As part of that statement from Senator Cruz, he said he spent more time with his family, which is the most cliche line in politics, perhaps.
I know. You have to wonder every time somebody says that. But I don't know any reason to disbelieve that. He had such a strong religious conservative stamp on everything that came out of his committee, and it tended then not to go anywhere. And so perhaps there will be some broader policy debates, perhaps a little more movement. I don't expect that it'll be any less conservative. That's a very conservative caucus. Anybody you put in there pretty much was going to be conservative. But it may be a little broader interest, but I don't know this senator. And so it'll be interesting to see. He hasn't been a chairman. It'll be interesting to see what he does.
Yeah, that's something, too. I mean, Education is a pretty big committee. This is Jeff Ross's first committee chairmanship, mm-hmm. And a guy who's only been there since, I mean, who's only served one term. Are you a little surprised at him being the choice?
Well, at this point, given the rate of turnover we have in the legislature, they're all only there for one term. I mean, so like, being there for 4 years is, I mean, you're a seasoned vet at that point. And look, he sat, you know, shotgun with Dennis Cruz for the last several sessions too. So he knows that committee, knows those issues. You know, I will say that the longevity of that committee, the length of debate in that committee, you know, we had a lot of interns take notes at those committees. We didn't actually do that. I could go home 6 hours early instead of finishing that. But the reason for that was those issues were, many times those issues were very controversial, and Senator Cruz was never one that wanted to, like, kind of violate the process and just kind of ram this stuff through that Democrats didn't want, and there were margin, you know, that were, you know, whether it was, you know, school choice or whatever, that was really the hot button issue and controversial. Even with some Republicans, he wanted the full debate out there, and he committed to that and
did
it.
That's true. I think the reputation this guy has is that he's willing at least to listen and to talk to all sides, which is good. I think it's time for the legislature to be held accountable on this. I mean, we've passed all these things about schools and pupils and teachers all being evaluated and all. We have done so much with choice and with vouchers, and we don't have any idea whether that's improved education one iota. And it's about time we looked at that and where the new money is going. And it's going to all of those programs outside of the traditional public education where 93% of the students go. And we ought to be seeing some markedly better results, or we better reevaluate what we're doing. But the legislature doesn't seem to want to evaluate itself.
There are grumblings among, like, the non-education legislators who aren't in these committee hearings. Almost exactly on Ann's point, where they're like, can we do nothing for a minute and see if all this stuff you made us pass
makes
works?
A difference?
Right, and that's not I don't think that's unfair. I think there's a lot of legislators.
Would you mind doing an affidavit to that effect just so that I can show it to you later?
I just put it on tape.
Yes, you did. I'll have to save the tape.
All I know is the question I have is whether Senator Gene Lysing's annual curse of bill gets out of that committee now. Central Indiana.
Did we pass that?
Yeah, we've passed that every single year. Central Indiana lost its bid to attract Amazon's new headquarters. As the online titan announced this week, it chose New York and a Washington, D.C. suburb.
Indianapolis had been one of 20 finalists in Amazon's year-long, highly publicized Olympic-style search for what became known as HQ2. The result was a little anticlimactic, as Amazon announced it would split the second headquarters in two between Queens and Northern Virginia. Each location will get more than 25,000 jobs. Amazon also announced it will open an operations center in Nashville, generating 5,000 new jobs there. The online giant is expected to get more than $2 billion in incentives as part of its two headquarters agreements. Indiana officials say they didn't offer the sort of financial enticements other cities did.
Mary Beth Schneider, local officials did what they often do. They talked about how much they won without actually winning. But in this case, is there some truth to that spin?
I don't think so. I think this thing was a con from the get-go. And you know, they get 238 cities across the nation to, you know, show some leg and offer all kinds
Careful.
Of incentives.
Can't say that anymore.
I was just going to say
that. I'm sorry, but this, you know, and then who do they end up with? You know, it's not one headquarter. It's, yeah, basically two satellite offices that are within like 7 miles of Jeff Bezos's three homes. So give me a break. They were always going there. And if anything, I think the cities kind of looked like chumps. And, you know, I was watching a market analyst, a man from New York, and he said that, if you are the richest man in the world, are you going to spend 12 minutes in Indianapolis, much less 12 days a year? So what did we get out of it? We ended up getting mocked, like whoever thought they'd come to Indianapolis. Indianapolis does have a lot to offer, but this wasn't serious. And furthermore, $50,000 in incentives for these jobs, these are very good jobs, but at some point you have to ask. They are, again, richest man in the world, one of the richest, most dominant companies in the world. Do you really need to be offering them this kind of money?
There's some, maybe the more instructive thing to me is, I agree, I think there's some sense here that it was never going to come to Indianapolis, but the Nashville location for the logistics hub was something that feels like Indiana should have been in the running for, and Indianapolis doesn't even seem to know whether they were or not, because they were taken you know, by surprise by that. Does that sting a little more than maybe the two headquarters deal?
Well, it certainly stings that they didn't even know it was in the you know, up for consideration. I mean, they put together a package that we still don't know what was in it. I don't think it hurt. I think, you know, some site selectors out there might probably know a little more about Indianapolis now. I don't think it's bad in any way, but you know, I don't really think we gained anything from it. I think we've built a pretty good base, and companies enjoy being here, and so we'll see if it helps out in the future.
I want to ask about something she just mentioned, which is, as once the decision was announced, we've started to see some of the packages that other cities, losing cities, offered. We haven't seen Indianapolis, and we're not going to see it unless somebody leaks it. So should we know what Indianapolis and Central Indiana offered?
Why? We're not paying it. I mean, you know, obviously we didn't offer as much as New York and Washington did, and you would expect that because the cost of construction in either of those locations and the cost of land is going to be astronomically higher than here. What I don't think the Amazon executives thought about was the cost of living for the employees, which would be markedly lower here, and that $100,000 a year job
would go a whole lot further. Yeah. Yeah.
Instead of getting you an efficiency with 900 square feet in New York, you could have a home
Crystal
here.
City.
Now, it's not as sexy, frankly. We're not on the coast. We don't have the ocean. We don't have Washington, D.C. or the Big Apple. But it is a great place to live, and as those young people who work for them grow older and want to have families, they're not going to want to live there. Of course, that may be part of Amazon's strategy because their salary would have gone up. They could get rid of them and get new people in at a younger rate, at a lower rate, I mean.
But I do think there should be transparency and that we should know what they're offering.
Let me ask you, is it helpful?
Reporters would think that.
I'm sorry?
The reporters would think that. I'm with you.
It gives
you exposure you don't need to leverage off a future deal.
That's the problem.
Right? That's the problem with it.
Somebody else coming in and say, you know, you offered Amazon this and you didn't offer this to us.
You know, as a Midwesterner here in New York and New York City and Washington, D.C. wins something, kind of felt like that episode of The Simpsons when Mr. Burns wins a $1 million bet and Smithers says, what are you going to do with it? And he says, I'll just throw it on the pile with the rest of it. It's like, it doesn't matter. You could have gone to, it was great that Gary, Indiana, went through this exercise of bringing the community together and putting together like a long-term vision. You want to talk about like, transforming a part of this country, you could have put $25,000, $100,000 jobs in Gary and changed hundreds of thousands of people's lives
in the direction of Detroit. I think those are the huge missed opportunity
for
Amazon.
Mm-hmm. Well, Indiana Senator Todd Young was chosen this week to lead the Senate Republicans' campaign arm.
Young was voted by his fellow Republicans to chair the National Republican Senate Committee during the 2020 campaign cycle. The Hoosier senator had the support of both Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, and outgoing NRSC head Cory Gardner. 2020 looks to be a different year for Senate Republicans than 2018, when they were able to pick up seats in their majority. The next cycle sees fewer opportunities to gain, with more Republicans playing defense. Young is set to be Indiana's senior senator, though he was only elected 2 years ago.
Mike O'Brien, what does this post do for Todd Young?
Well, it puts him at the table with leadership. So if you're a Hoosier and you want our priorities kind of put front and center in that caucus, this is a really good thing. It gives him a network of people to make him a more effective senator as he's going out and helping defend these 22 Republicans that are up for election, go try to win in some of these 12 states held by Democrats. So it's all upside for the state of Indiana.
That said, if it is all upside, though, 2020 does look like a tougher campaign year for Senate Republicans.
Doesn't it, though? Isn't that
just because of the sheer numbers of where they're going to?
Yeah. So I hope he doesn't become the scapegoat if they go down as they may. But you know, Richard Lugar had this post in the past too, and he was able to use it. He was able to use it effectively to build broad base coalitions. The climate in the Senate is a little bit different, so I'm not sure how successful Todd Young would be in able, you know, bringing our issues forward to the table is one thing. Getting it enacted is a whole different ball of wax, but it's certainly a plus for him, at least until the 2020 campaign is over.
This is obviously looking way out, but if Senate Republicans aren't as successful as they might want to be in 2020, does that end up looking not so great for Todd Young, or is it...
Well, obviously, he's the one in charge, so he would have to take the hit if they don't defend as many or turn any over. I personally am interested to see how he responds. I don't really know him in the sort of campaign strategist way, so and I don't know if he can, for lack of a better word, get down and dirty with all the negative campaigning that we see on these national Senate races. So I think that'll be interesting to
see. So will this be a new side of Todd Young we might see?
Since we haven't seen it before. I think there's a lot of risk for him, though. It is a tough map for them that year. Donald Trump, assuming he is still on the ballot then, it'll once again be all about Trump. It's going to be very difficult. You saw this year where House Republicans tried to get the argument changed to something other than Trump, and Trump absolutely refused to let them do that. And I think the same thing will happen to Todd Young. So no matter how brilliant a strategist he is, it may be for naught.
Well, that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, Mary Beth Schneider of thestatehousefile.com, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the new WFYI app. From all of us here at the show, a happy Thanksgiving to all of you out there. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.